Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Happy Monday, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. We're so happy to have you join us today on the day before the election. Today, we have a very special guest joining us, very special to me, that is, because we have my husband here, Ian Andes. Now, since I had first conceived of having this show, I had always wanted to have Ian on as a guest because he has been one of my best business mentors with owning my own company for the last 7 years and has really been an inspiration to me and to many of my business associates because of his longstanding career in technology, sales, and marketing. He's currently responsible for worldwide experience at Red Digital Cinema. He first started his career in Montreal after graduating with a bachelor's degree in English from McGill University and went on to work at Matrox in tech support and technical marketing. During his career, he had his opportunity to work at a dream jobs at a special effects software company, and that's where this conversation comes into play. During that position, he actually got fired. And today, what we're going to talk to you about is what it's like. How do you bounce back after you've been fired? And both from the employee standpoint, which at the time Ian was an employee, and now as an employer, as having been a manager for the past 10 years. So, Ian, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Awesome. Well, it's so great to have you here. So tell our listeners about that experience. So here you were, you thought you landed your dream job. It's working for a special effects studio, and then you got fired. How did you handle that?
Yeah, so, well, it's an interesting story. And I actually think that contextually going back to how I even got the job is also important for a lot of people listening. So it was a company that I coveted. I'd wanted to work there for years. They were leaders in the industry. At the time, virtually any movie you've ever seen that had any special effects in it went through some of their systems. And I'm a very big movie buff. And, you know, at the beginning, I found the right person, found him on a trade show, gave him my resume and said, you got to hire me, which they did. It was for a marketing role. And to be honest, I was so enamored with the company, I didn't really do my research on what the job would entail. I just wanted to get my foot in the door. Mm. And, you know, to this day, it's a fantastic company. But when I really got down to it, about two and a half months in, I was writing massive product launch profiles for, you know, $20, $30 million systems. And to be quite honest, I didn't even know how to turn the machines on. So, you know, 2.5 months, 3 months, you start getting to that 90-day window. I got a call from HR that I was going to meet with my boss at 9 a.m., and I pretty much knew exactly what that meant. And when I walked in, you know, he was nervous. I could tell what was going on, and I kind of put him at ease. I'm like, look, I know this isn't working. I can't do what you want me to do, and I totally understand that we're terminating this relationship, which is very different than what I think most people go through, you know. And today, you know, he terminated me, lost the job. And one of the benefits was I still see him at trade shows. We're very friendly. You know, I was able to take that into different avenues in my career within the industry because I learned a very valuable lesson when that relationship was cut. Really know what your strengths are, know what you want to do. And in a situation where you get a dream job that you want or what you think is a dream job, there's so many cliches. One door closes, you know, two more open. when something like that happens, it's a great opportunity to step back and evaluate, what are you good at? What do you want to do? What's the industry you want to be in? And if you can take the context of you've just been given free freedom, then you can open up virtually any door to go and do whatever you want to do. And it was in that moment that I realized, look, even though I might love these companies and it's a great way in, I'm not the kind of guy that can sit down at a desk and write paperwork for 8-10 hours a day. And, you know, it's funny, at the time I could hear my dad's voice in my head telling me that I could, I'm Canadian, if you haven't got the accent by now. But my dad used to tell me I could sell snow to an Eskimo. And it was at that moment that I realized that my path and my career was going to be in management and sales. Or management sales, or making sure that organizations are doing the right things for their customers and have a real hands-on in that interpersonal experience, speaking with people and making sure that they're getting the most out of company that they can.
Had you ever been in a position prior to that where it had been very paper intensive and writing intensive, or was that your first foray into that and you just thought you could do it?
Yeah, well, it's funny, right? Because you can go to school for all kinds of different degrees. And of course, if you're going to have somebody operate on your brain, you want to know that they've spent 20 years studying biology and doing that type of thing. I don't really know of any schools other than maybe some weekend courses or some courses, et cetera, that teach you how to be a good sales guy. But I went to school for English. I mean, my entire life revolved around writing papers. And in hindsight, I look back and realize, yeah, I did a good job at it, but I didn't really like it. Mm. I may have loved learning about the subjects I was studying, but the actual sitting down and knocking out the papers drove me nuts. You know, where I really excelled was I remember doing some stuff in pre-law and getting through debates with other people in the class, pretending you're a lawyer. Whether or not all of my facts were checked is debatable, but I did really, really well at convincing people and speaking to people and having that interaction. So, you know, I did a lot of technical writing, but even then I was afforded the opportunity to make some of it really, really creative. So I guess that the, you know, I don't want to say lack of ability, but it's probably a good analogy, was masked by the ability to fill it in with other things. Like as I was writing papers and writing tech sheets, etc., I was also doing demonstrations in front of large audiences. Mm. So it was really the first time that I sat down and all I was doing was writing launch plans.
Interesting. Okay. And so how, when you get fired, because for many of our listeners out there, I want to distinguish the difference first between being fired and being laid off, because sometimes people can have those two things collapsed. When you're fired or terminated, there are a couple of different types of termination. In Ian's case, it sounds like you were terminated because your skills weren't the right fit. It's not like you were terminated for embezzling money or doing something egregious or constantly showing up late or not showing up at all. It was a skills-based termination, correct?
Yeah, I didn't do anything illegal.
I hope not. We've been married 12 years and it's never come up before.
There's nothing illegal. No, it was ability-based. I wasn't good at what I was doing.
Okay. And so what I want our listeners to understand, because sometimes I hear people make the mistake in an interview, is when you're laid off, say a company is going through a massive restructuring and your position is eliminated due to lack of funds or due to movement within the company, that's actually something very distinct than what we're talking about, which is being fired. When you're laid off, many thousands, millions of people got laid off back in 2008, 9, 10, 11, 12, and 13, and even still to this day. So I just want our listeners to understand, being laid off is typically not looked upon or frowned upon in the industry as being bad or wrong. However, oftentimes if somebody tells a potential employer, I've been terminated or I've been fired, that can cause a little bit of pause on the employer end. So from your perspective, were you okay with being fired?
Well, okay, I think there's a couple different sides on that when you say it that way. No, I wasn't okay with it, not at the time. I think anybody, if they look themselves in the mirror, would have to have an evaluation. You're either in denial if it doesn't bother you, or, you know, you've got a choice in that moment to evaluate what's going on and look at it. I didn't like it. It's in, you know, going back through my life, it's probably the only thing I've ever failed at, but I set my mind to something and I wasn't able to succeed. I wasn't able to be successful. And when you look at what is so, only then can you affect change. And if I would have lied to myself about it, if I would have made up stories about it, if I would have made up excuses, I know for a fact I wouldn't be where I am now. But it was an opportunity to really look at what happened, look at what I was up to in life, what I was committed to, and then also look at the path I was taking to get there. And those things were not connected. What I was doing and what I set myself up for had nothing to do with what I actually wanted to do in life. But I had to have that event in my life happen for me to realize that. You know, going back to like a sales mantra, I'm a firm believer if you're going to lose the deal, lose it early. Mm. Otherwise, you can be in something for 2 weeks, 6 months, 5 years, only then realize what a mistake. And if I would have paid attention, I would have known at the beginning that this was never going to happen, or at least it wouldn't have happened well.
It's interesting you say that, because I come across both sides of people on the job seeker front. Obviously, I own a recruiting company, and when we recruit people, they're doing a trial period. Most of them are in a probationary 90-day period where the client is evaluating whether or not that individual is going to work out in their role. And what's really interesting is I've seen it go both ways. Yes, I think on a gut instinctual level, if in the first 90 days you know without a shadow of a doubt it's not the right fit, then yes, you should cut your losses and, like you said, lose the deal early. And I will say that for me, I mean, I don't think we had met yet, but when I first started my very first recruiting job, I remember crying every day I came into the office because there were some bullies in my first office. And I think what was different between me and you there was the bullies were people, and those were things that had nothing to do with my skills. I loved recruiting. I loved helping job seekers, and that was something I was passionate about. And so that's why I pushed through that first 90 days, and then those girls all became my friends once I learned, you know, kind of who they were. So what would you say is it, when should you actually invest the time and energy to give it more than 3 months before throwing in the towel? If you think you're going to be fired, should you stick it out and try and make it work, or should you throw in the towel?
I actually think you asked me a couple different questions on it.
I've been known to do that.
Yeah, so, and I'll try and take these one at a time. When do you throw in the towel? It depends if you believe that there's potential. If you can look yourself in the mirror, and again, it's always a gut check. At any moment, you want to look yourself in the mirror and say, okay, is there potential for what I want my life to look like, for it to succeed where I am right now?
Mm.
And if the potential's there, and if you have a desire, keep doing it. You know, there's a lot of analogies in my life that I use revolving around golf, but not everyone's going to be Tiger Woods out of the gate, and you're not going to always break par. But it's the striving to get there that makes a difference, right? It's the road that you're traveling. What's the expression? Life is the journey, not a destination. There's no guarantee you're ever going to be amazing at what you're trying to do. But if you're passionate about it and you really look at what's missing so you can start putting things into effect to improve upon them, that's the reward. The reward is the traveling of trying to get to that destination. A lot of people miss it when they actually get the destination and it flies right by.
Touche, or as you would say, touche. Okay, so now let's say that you understand the difference between getting fired and getting laid off, and you were clearly fired or terminated, whether it was for cause, something egregious, mm-hmm. or just wasn't a good skill set. How do you bounce back? How did you move forward and not make it mean something about yourself, or make it mean, like you said earlier, that you were a failure?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it comes down to how you interact with yourself. It's how you view yourself as a person. I don't think there's a magic pill. I don't think that there's a formula. I think it's going to be very different for other people. And for me, it wasn't really a matter of bouncing back. It was really a matter of, okay, here's what's so. I tried something. It didn't work out. Instead of wallowing in it, instead of getting depressed about it, instead of blaming everyone else about it, I looked at myself and said, okay, what they wanted was 1, 2, 3. What I gave them was ABC. That didn't work. Excellent. I learned that in the first 2.5 months instead of 5 years down the road when it was too late to do something else or have a career change. So I said, okay, I gave them ABC. I need to go find a job and a career path, which is going to reward me for providing ABC. You know, I think the important thing for me is I never blamed them. I didn't fault them. I looked at myself, and I think that, you know, and I hate some of the terminology of Gen Xers, millennials, and all that stuff, right? For me, it's a matter of they wanted something and I wasn't able to provide it. Mm-hmm. I actually honor them for not wasting their time. They could have strung me along for 2 or 3 months, you know, to bring it back to like a sales. See, the thing for me, sales is so cut and dry. If you've got somebody who's continuously underperforming, they're not hitting their numbers, they're not hitting their targets, right? They're not making their commissions. One of two things is happening. You've either hired the wrong person because they're unable to do it, or you're a really bad manager at setting their goals.
Hmm.
So it's not fair to the employer to keep them around if they're never going to be really good at what you hired them to do. because again, you either were a bad hirer or they're just not good at it. So cut ties, get what you need for your business, because at the end of the day, it's just business, and get somebody who's really good at doing what they're doing, that they want to do it, because the longer you string somebody on, the longer you're stopping them from finding out what they should be doing with their life.
I get where you're coming from, and, you know, obviously having known you all these years, the one thing that I think I've really admired about you is that you can separate business and emotions and business and personal. And I know over the years I've come to you for a lot of coaching when, whether it's been a business deal that's fallen apart or something that I took personally. For anybody out there who might be in my position where I'm more inclined to not be 100% cut and dry, this is this and that is that, how would you, or what advice would you give to somebody who tends to be a little bit more emotional sometimes? Is there any sort of methodology that you would recommend to be able to separate and say, this is business and it's not as impactful or emotional?
Yeah. I'll steal another quote. Honesty without compassion is cruelty. And it's not cut and dry where, you know, you're going to hurt somebody as you terminate the relationship. It doesn't have to be that way. In fact, sometimes if done properly, severing the relationship from a worker and an employee can be a very empowering context for them. You can really build something and make sure that you're clear. Look, it's, I'm not going to go so far as to say you're doing them a favor, but you're helping them on their career path to get them realigned to what they really should be doing. And a good employer is going to be able to tell that person, here's what was missing. And look, I get it. I'm Canadian, like I said, so especially in the States, there's a lot of legalities around it. So I'm not saying you just go out and do something foolish, but you set people up with expectations, and if they can't fulfill the expectations, if you as a manager did your job, them getting terminated shouldn't be a surprise.
Got it. Interesting. And so one of the other things that I picked up on that you said earlier, when you transitioned after being fired, it sounded to me like one of the pieces of advice that you might give somebody is be accountable.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, there's always two sides. There's going to be cases where it had nothing to do with the person who was employed. Companies go through hard times and you can get some downscaling. You know, but I think you said it well before, that that's the difference between a termination, a firing, and a layoff. Sometimes it's got nothing to do with the individual, and what they should do is find a similar company and get the exact same job. So I'm trying to go back to the question. I got a train of thought there.
Oh, I was saying, as far as a piece of advice, was there any other advice you would give to somebody who's been fired aside from being accountable? You said, yes, that was one thing you would definitely suggest. And then you started to elaborate on some other ideas.
There's so many. I think one of the other things I would tell people, just give yourself a set time. Get your best friend, get your significant other, get whoever it takes and say, okay, this just happened. I'm going to give myself until X date to wallow in it. And just get it out of your system. Don't make it 5 years. That's a little extreme. Give yourself 2 weeks. You go out, you blow off some steam, you know, you go play golf, you go out and have a couple drinks, you have a bottle of wine, you do whatever you have to do.
Or yoga or other yoga, healthy or other options, healthy meditation. I love unplugged meditation.
So, but, you know, really give yourself a very specific amount of time. And then after that time's up, okay, imagine what you want your life to look like and imagine who you think the person would need to be in order to have the life you imagined, and start being that person. And it really is that easy. And just ask yourself, at any moment in time, you've got two roads, one to the left and one to the right. And ask yourself, the choice I'm about to make, is it conducive to what I want my life to look like? And if the answer is no, don't do it. And don't fool yourself. Don't say, yeah, but one more shot and I know I won't get hungover. Life's going to be amazing. You know, actually go out and be honest. Is the choice I'm about to make going to fulfill what I want my life to look like? And even though you can have a million reasons why you can fool yourself, don't fall for your own tricks. Don't do it.
You just made me think of something we both learned about years ago in a class called Landmark Education, where I think it was seeing Merlin on the hill. Like, do you remember that analogy where it's like Merlin is standing on top of the hill looking at everything he's just created? Do you remember it specifically?
Yeah, it was a little bit different than that.
Okay.
So
you're better with specifics than I am.
That's right. So, you know, the story was, you know, obviously Merlin, the times of King Arthur, etc., there were battles and, you know, King Arthur was like, Merlin, how are we going to do this? There's another big battle and I just don't see how to win. So Merlin used his magic and he went on top of the mountain to the future and he saw the win. And he said, okay, we've already won. Now all we have to do is create how we did the win.
Ah, that's right. It's so much more eloquent when you put it that way.
Yes, well.
And so for a context for the job seekers out there that I personally use in my own life, say hypothetically, God forbid you were fired or laid off or whatever the scenario might be. I invite you to be Merlin, to look at your life, whether it's 3 years down the road, 5 years down the road. For me, every 5 years, I create a new five-year plan and I set my life up of here's what I'm doing 5 years from now, whether it's recruiting, having a radio show like this. In fact, ironically, just today I found out I've always dreamed of building schools, and that was on my five-year plan, and I did not have a path or know what that was going to look like, but standing in the possibility of having schools built, having my own radio show, it showed up, and just today I started doing work on building my own school. So I invite you, whatever it is, what matters to you? That's a good question you always want to ask yourself in your career. I think in Ian's case, he was saying he loves interacting with people. For him, that mattered to him. And so he built a career looking backwards and going, okay, I'm standing in having a job where I can impact people and make a difference and do what he loves. I invite you to do the same thing and look at what percentage of your time you're doing different tasks. And then once you've done that and you've created your five-year plan, look back at 4 years. Okay, so I've achieved that at 5 years. And when I used to be a career coach, I would do this exercise with people. And so then at 4 years, how did I get to the five-year mark? At 3 years, and work your way backwards instead of forwards. And it can really be an empowering context, especially when you've gone through a transition in a career. Anything else you wanted to add about that?
Yeah, there's one more. And I think it's a great analogy to really get the point across, right? Right now in Hollywood, superheroes are a really big deal.
Yes.
Right? All the big blockbusters have to do with some hero, whether or not he makes sense or whether or not he's like really weird and out there. But look, in any situation in life, and I think that if people in general did this, the world would be a better place. And, you know, I'm going to use a word, and it's not necessarily a negative thing. It's just an honest evaluation of how you want to approach your life. You've got a choice. You can be the hero or you can be the victim. And a hero is going to act in a very specific way. And so is a victim. Victims need saving from other people. And sometimes in life, that's what you want. Whether you're married, whether you're dating, there's all kinds of scenarios where being a victim and being saved can be beneficial. The only thing for me is then you're not accountable for how your life is going to go. You're at the mercy of somebody else. A hero is going to take charge of how they want their life to go. They're going to walk into the situation and, you know, I love the quote, walk into every room like you're supposed to be there. They're going to walk into that room and be like, you know what? I'm 100% accountable for how things are going to go and I'm going to go save this. Whether it's a job, whether it's an account, whether it's in a relationship. If you can have the mindset that you're 100% accountable for how every situation goes, then on one hand, you'll never have anyone else to blame, which keeps you 100% accountable for what's going on. But on the other hand, you can also really design your life and go in and make sure that you are responsible for how things are going for you. And it can be very, very empowering. So I always tell people, you know, look at the situation and make your choice. Are you going to be the hero in that situation or are you going to be the victim?
I love that you just brought that up because it's really funny. Julian, who's my business coach that you know, talked to me about this a really interesting phenomenon called the drama triangle, that especially in businesses, this is often why people might get fired or might find themselves discontented. Did you ever see that cartoon? I think it's Rodney and Bullwinkle, where you had Dudley Do-Right and then you had Mr. Snidely and then you had Nell. And so basically, if you missed that cartoon when you were growing up, Dudley Do-Right
Rocky
is the hero.
And Bullwinkle, but anyway.
Well, what was the show? I don't remember.
Dudley Do-Right. He was one of the characters, the Canadian Mountie.
Okay. I don't follow television. I grew up under a rock. Right. For those of you who don't know me, I grew up in San Diego. And we had very limited TV, so I don't remember what the name of the TV show was.
Rocky and Bullwinkle. Bullwinkle's the moose. Rocky's the squirrel.
Yeah. Okay. So anyways, Dudley Do-Right is this Canadian Mountie, apparently, who's the hero, and he always has to save Nell, who is the victim. And then you have the perpetrator, which was, what was it, Snidely? And so, and what's really interesting is the hero blames the perpetrator and the victim. The hero blames the victim for getting in trouble and the perpetrator for having the hero have to save the victim. The victim blames the perpetrator and the perpetrator blames the hero. And thus you get into this drama triangle. And when you can identify which of those aspects you're coming from in any situation in business, it can actually give you a very empowering context, just like what Ian was talking about. Any other lessons or anything you'd like to share with our listeners about when you were fired specifically?
No, I mean, look, I think we covered a lot. I could probably keep on talking about this for hours, but I think the point's across.
Okay. So I would love now to take it to the other side. I know that you've had an extremely successful career spanning over 20 years in technology, sales, and marketing, and that you helped one of your teams that you were with for 10 years go through three different acquisitions. And what I find is really interesting for anybody out there listening is during those three acquisitions, you kept at least 80 to 90%, if not 100% of your team through all three of those acquisitions. And so how did you do that? And then what was it like when you did have to let somebody go if they weren't performing?
So I think on the first question of how did I keep them, this can open up an entire conversation on the interview process in and of itself, because I'm very opinionated on many things.
You opinionated? Never.
On many different things. And one of them is the interviewing process. I'm not conventional. I do a lot of very different things in interviews.
Can you share one of your favorite? I love your interviewing questions because they're so out of the box.
Yeah. Depends on the position you're interviewing for. All right. So let's go through the philosophy of interviewing. So first off, be very, very clear on the position you're hiring for and how that's going to serve your company. So if hiring somebody in operations is very different than hiring somebody in sales, which is very different than hiring somebody in finance.
Or marketing.
Or if hiring somebody in marketing. You know, in the interview process itself, depending on which side of the table you're on, most people go into an interview thinking, I have to get this job. And most people will do and say whatever they need to put themselves in the best position to get that job. That's not how, sorry if I offend your listeners here, that's not how I tell people to go and interview. In fact, I think it should be 50-50. When I have a friend or somebody go in for an interview, or when I go in for an interview, I'm usually interviewing them just as much as they're interviewing me. It's my job to see if I'm actually going to be able to do for them what they need. And I have to figure out if they're even clear on what they need as an organization and then figure out if I can do it for them. Will I fit in culturally? Are there things that to me are just unacceptable? And you really want to be clear going into that interview if they're a good match for you. Now, the other thing that has is when you go in trying to figure out if they're a good match for you, you do the other thing I always tell people, ask a lot of questions, engage with them. People love talking about themselves. So even when you're going in for an interview, if you're asking them good questions, you're getting your potential employer to start talking. And they may give something up where it's like, oh, wait a minute, that doesn't really work for me. This wouldn't be a good fit. Or it's, wow, that's amazing. And guess what? I can do this, this, and that for you that they may not have been thinking of. So it really is like a first date. You're trying to find out and figure each other out and see if this is going to be a good fit. When doing the interviewing, I also know that people are trying to put their best foot forward. I try and keep it informal. If I'm at a company, which I never am, if I'm at a company that has suits and ties, I expect a person to show up in a suit and tie because I want them to be in the environment they're going to be working in. I'm in a great industry in technology where I think, you know, at a couple jobs I was told show up in jeans and a t-shirt because we're very informal and people wearing flip-flops. And get the people in the environment where they'll be working. There's no point interviewing somebody in a suit and tie if they're going to be wearing jeans and a t-shirt all day. It's a completely different atmosphere and you're setting them up to be false to begin with. And then when you're doing the interviewing, again, it's not a popularity contest. You're not voting for the prom king and queen. It's not who's the prettiest or the best looking. When you're interviewing somebody, imagine that you're literally giving them money out of your pocket to do something for you. If, for example, and I'm trying to do something which isn't going to get me in trouble here, but if you were hiring somebody to work on the sanitation in your home and they showed up in like a $10,000 dress, they are not properly equipped or dressed to do the thing that you want them to do. So they don't understand the position they're being interviewed for. So, you know, I'll give you a more concrete example. There are people that I know in the industry that have reputations of being very tough. They are brutal. And there are, you know, suppliers, manufacturers that hate working with these people at really big companies. Most people hate them and be like, I would never hire them. Those are the types of people for operations I'd hire in a heartbeat.
Because, why?
Well, because I know that if they were working for me, they would get every nickel and dime out of that supplier possible, and they will always do what's best for my company. Hmm. They're not there to win popularity contests. They're not there to be loved and adored. They are there to make sure that my suppliers supply me with the things that they said they would do, and they keep them on a very short leash. I know exactly what type of person is successful in that environment, and I interview them that way. But if they were interviewing for sales, forget it. Salespeople are supposed to have really good relationships. They're supposed to be people person people. You know, they're supposed to be able to have really good, effective communication skills. Find out what the buyer isn't telling them so that they can help close that deal. It's a completely different interview. So, you know, I know you asked me, what are some of the questions that I ask? And the problem is, I don't
by the way, he asked me a few of these on our first date. I'm not going to lie. And that's what made me love him.
Well, so I'll ask questions not to get the answer. And what's going to be fun here is I'm not actually going to tell your listeners what the answers are. But I'll ask questions to find out how the person thinks. Because a salesperson should think very differently than an accountant, should think very differently than a lawyer, should think very differently than somebody in operations. They're all going to think differently. And my job as the interviewer is to find out how their mind works. A, to find out if they're going to be successful in the job. And B, so that when they work for me, I know how to help them be really, really good at their jobs. Right? Like I subscribe to always hire people smarter than you, because then they're helping the company, not just you. You know, so one of the classic questions, and anyone that's ever worked for me has been asked this question, why are manhole covers round?
I remember that from the first date, and I think I got it right.
No, because there is no right or wrong answer.
Yes, there is.
It's how you answer the question.
I'm just kidding.
You know, there's other, now I know that like Microsoft and Google, they've got these really complex questions for their engineers, and it has to do with four people are on one side of a river and you got a raft and only two can, you know, cross it at the same time, and they'll go through really complex stuff, and they'll actually videotape you on how you try and go about solving that question. Some of the other good ones is like, what's the general mathematical equation for how many gas stations any community can sustain at any given time?
For the record, for our listeners out there, 90% of any company you're going to interview with is not going to ask you these sorts of questions. But I thought it's fun, because if you ever do get asked what we would consider in the HR world a behavioral question like this, it is fascinating, because half of it is if you just shut down and say, I can't answer that, or if you say, I have no idea, then that's going to show how you deal with pressure.
That's right. And there will be jobs that are very, very pressure-packed. And I'll try and simulate a situation in an interview, and I'll put pressure on the person just to see how they respond to it. So, you know, I also remember going through another interview at a company here in LA where a friend of mine got me up for the job. I actually wound up getting it. I loved working there. And there was four or five managers in the room all interviewing me at the same time. I didn't know it at the time, but apparently the job was mine to lose. And they wanted to see just how much I could take before I broke. Hmm. And they ganged up on me. They were asking me brutal questions. You know, what color is an apple? If you answer red, it's yellow. If you answer yellow, it's red. You just can't win, right? But what they wanted to see was how far they can push until it broke. And, you know, when I walked out of there, I told my friend, I'm like, they either set that up as a gag to see what I could take and they loved me, or I got bad news. We're not working together. And I got the offer the next day. So
that leads me into one of my next questions. So say, you know, you spend all this time and attention and you've done all of your due diligence to make sure you've hired the right person for your team. And I know, obviously, knowing that you, that you've had a long success and history of people who have followed you. And I also know that there have been a handful of occasions where, unfortunately, you have had to terminate people on your end.
Yep.
Is there ever a chance when somebody's in a 90-day probationary period, for you specifically, I get you're not every manager out there, where somebody can redeem themselves?
In a 90-day period, it's much, much tougher, because that's when you're in that gray area where a termination is easier. And it's like, well, how much effort do I have to put into the employee to turn them around? Or was it just extenuating circumstances and stuff happened? You know, their dog got sick. The bus didn't work the way they thought it would. You never know. In the first 90 days, it's tough because once you make that impression, turning that around really is difficult. And then that's where I'll also rely on the team. So you asked me before how come a lot of the team got to stay with us. Because we did a really good job of hiring the team. And I know that there are people and managers that say, I'm going to go and hire, or I'm going to go and interview Jennifer, and none of you have to see her. And then if I like her, you're just going to have to make it work. Typically, I get virtually everybody to interview
to buy
a candidate.
In.
Because if one person doesn't get along with them and you have a really good thing going at the company, that one new employee could shake things up to the point where it's detrimental to the entire organization. Now, sometimes you want to do that because things are stagnant, things aren't going well, and you got to throw a curveball and get people to start thinking differently. But when things are going well and you did your job with the first base core of your hires, as everyone interviews them and you get a feel from how everyone handles that new employee, you're going to know how things are going to go in the future. You know, recently, I know some people that got interviewed, the first round didn't go very well, brought them back in for a second round and really, really grilled them. And found out that one of the major reasons at the beginning it didn't work was because those two divisions really wouldn't work well together.
Mm.
And they just operate within the organization fundamentally differently. Still important that they're going to get along, but it was really good feedback. And I found out things about the candidate that I had no idea.
That's very helpful. And so you're saying in your experience, during when you've decided you're going to term a candidate and they're in that 90-day period and they have an opportunity to turn around, there's a high unlikelihood that they're going to be able to do so. And sometimes if a person's going through a personal situation, it can still be remedied.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I don't know, maybe this just has to do with the crazy interview process, but I don't think I've ever had an issue within the first 90 days.
Well, to be clear, I'm also addressing once you've decided to term somebody. They're, like, you've had somebody who may have been on your team for 6 months, 6 years, and for whatever reason, you're now to the point where you're like, I have to. I'm giving this person 90 days to turn things around.
So I think one of the things that's grossly underestimated, especially in the United States, how difficult it is for someone to go through the emotional process of terminating somebody who has been with the company for a while, right?
I just had a horrible thought. I was just thinking of the election tomorrow. You're fired, Donald Trump. Yeah, sorry, I got distracted.
Again, as a Canadian, we're going to step over that one. But it's not easy, right? This isn't drama. This isn't reality TV. It's not as simple as saying you're fired and the ratings go up and what they're looking for there is the drama. It's somebody's life. It's somebody's family. And one of the things that helps, even though there's a very good chance that person won't talk to you again, if you're really coming at it from we're parting ways because, to be honest, you aren't doing what you were hired to do for whatever reason, this gives you an opportunity to shake things up. And like I said before, go out and find what you're supposed to be doing. It's not easy, and it's a very nerve-wracking experience. Now, do I know people that actually get off on it and love firing people? Yeah. In my mind, that's because they weren't actually very good at hiring to begin with. When you've hired somebody and it's worked out, the problem that you get into, and the one that I faced more often than not, is you hire them for one job, but then the company's grown into, or it's developed into a very different strategy, a very different division. It's got a different trajectory than you expected, and that employee wasn't able to modify their ways to the new trajectory. That's where sometimes you can get into a position where there's nothing you could have done. You couldn't have foreseen it. It's just going in a different direction, and now the company needs something very different from that team, and you've got to readjust and realign to fulfill on those new objectives.
I have found sometimes that if you put people on a performance improvement plan, or if people do know their jobs are in jeopardy, I've seen it both on the recruiting end and personally, that sometimes people can turn things around and really produce extraordinary results. And I think, like you said, it just depends on if the person steps up to the plate and has the opportunity. And it's unfortunate because in our recruiting business, we just had this happen where there was somebody we weren't allowed to share feedback with that it wasn't working out. And when we as the recruiters can't help guide somebody, then our hands are tied. And then that person is most certainly going to get terminated. However, on the occasions where a client does give us feedback and says X and Y aren't 100% on target with where they want them to be, the great thing about my line of work is we can often turn things around and coach people and then have people live happily ever after in jobs 6, 10, 20 years from now.
Yeah, I guess my litmus test for myself is, if I'm going to give somebody a second chance, am I willing to put my job on the line that I, as a manager, can turn them around?
Got it.
If the answer is no, then it's not going to work. Like, if you're looking in the mirror and saying, I would not risk my job to give them another 90 days, do it fast. It's just easier, and it's going to help everyone move on. If the answer is yes, and I've had a couple scenarios, and there's one of which in particular I'm very, very proud of.
I know that one.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Obviously, I can't divulge names and stuff, but it's that individual's probably one of the highlights of my career and how proud I am of them. Things got rough for a while. We had a very straightforward, very honest discussion. A lot of things were said in terms of, here's my expectations when you're at work. And whatever you do outside of work, I don't care. It's none of my business. It just doesn't come back with you into work. And that's probably the biggest success I've ever had of, consider it like a 1 minute probation, because we had that conversation in that 1 minute. And then that individual turned around and excels in the career and the industry unbelievably well.
It's great to hear stories like that. And yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
The most important thing is, A, the manager has to be crystal clear. Here's what you're doing, which isn't working. Here's what you need to do to make it work. And then if the employee can't look back and say, if I understood you correctly, and look, this is just a technique for listening. If I understood you correctly, here's what I'm doing that isn't working. Do I have that right? If it's wrong, you as a manager didn't communicate very well.
Hmm.
And then once you get to the point where you say, yes, that is exactly what you're doing that doesn't work for me. And then if the employee says, here's what you need me to do to make it right, and then they can go ahead and do that, you had a great conversation, you turn that person's life around. And that's when you know you've got to win. If they don't turn it around, I just don't believe in second, third, fourth chances, because now you're just wasting everyone's time.
Yeah, you give people, I think, one fair chance and give them an opportunity to show their true colors. And then after
both. So I can say, you know, a very wise friend of mine once said, both in marriage and business, you know, two people in any relationship only have one real job. Never make the same mistake twice. Because if you make the same mistake twice, you didn't actually learn from it the first time. And that's the cardinal sin.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And so you've given our listeners a lot of helpful information, from your experience being fired to what it's like being a manager and building a team and what you've looked for. What lessons would you say that you've learned now, having had to fire people and coming full circle and being on the other side of the table?
The lessons. I mean, I think that there's, to me, it's more like, what are the recipes for success that I found?
I would love to hear those.
Always be learning. I don't care what kind of class, whether it's transformational education, whether you're going back to night school, whether I'm currently addicted to this one app, Udemy, where I'm learning how to play guitar and it's teaching me this kind of stuff. Always be learning something, because if you're not expanding,
you're shrinking, contracting.
You're contracting, right? Yep. There is no stagnant. There is no status quo. And I think that that's a big, big mistake. You know, whether you read a lot or you don't, always take on something new, which is going to challenge you, that isn't easy, to expand who you are as a person. A great example, and I won't tell you which way I sway, but, you know, there's a lot of politics going on right now. Tomorrow's a very important day in this country. And even though I tend to favor one side over the other, I watch a lot of news from the other. So whether you're right wing or left wing, try actually watching the newscasts from the other side. If you understand where they're coming from, and at least you can have an appreciation of what they're trying to accomplish, you can either find a middle ground or at least reinforce your own opinions and be educated on them. Don't just get, you know, in your job. Don't get complacent. Don't get sucked into, well, I've been doing it for so long, I may as well just keep doing it this way. If you do come into a position where you're being terminated, you think you're going to be terminated, or you have to do, you know, the termination yourself, it's an opportunity to grow and expand who you are. And if you can come at it, even if the person doesn't ever talk to you again, that you're making a difference in their life for the rest of their life, and you're setting them up for what's next, you can't even quantify how big of a deal that can be for somebody. So I think that educating yourself, expanding yourself, continuously growing, find books, ask your friends, what are you doing? What can we read? Try something new. that's what's actually going to make a difference. And more importantly than anything else, any other job, you know, money, whatever it might be, that's where you get fulfillment in life. It's expanding and realizing who you are as a person and the impact that you can make on this world.
Brilliant. I am so happy that you could be here today. I know it's been invaluable for our listeners out there, and especially the day before the election, just to keep that in mind. Whatever choice we're going to make, that's the extraordinary thing, is that we have a choice, that we're in a country where we have the opportunity to choose in a democratic society. And like Ian just said, you know, educate yourself on both sides. And I love that my favorite thing about having been with Ian for the last 12 years is that every time I have an opinion, he always argues both sides of it. And it's not just to be a jerk, which sometimes it could be, but in all honesty, it helps me expand my own awareness and to say, wow, you know, I hadn't thought about it from that perspective. And as human beings, that's really all we have is perspective. Did you have anything else you wanted to add?
Yeah. Now, I know that we talked about it and you said I get to have some fun at the end of this. You know, we had an agreement that I won't bring up politics, but I will say this.
Let me tell you, his birthday is this week and he had a choice of being on the show today or next Monday. And he said, what day is the election? I will be on the show the day before the election. And then I had to kindly explain to him it's not a political show.
It's not a political show, but this is as political as I will get on this show. Tomorrow's a really big day. And whatever choice you make, however you're going to vote, whichever side you agree is going to further the conversation of this country, ask yourself, are they running on a campaign based on what the other person won't do or how they're going to drive this conversation forward? And more important than anything else, take a moment and thank an officer. Thank somebody in the military. Thank a veteran. Because even if we disagree, and in some cases it's getting a pretty aggressive disagreement on how the future of this country should go, they're the ones that sacrifice their lives or put their lives on the line to potentially be sacrificed so that we can have that conversation. So as you're talking to people, as you're having these discussions, just remember, one of the beautiful things of this country is that you're allowed to have that conversation, and it's encouraged, and it's healthy debate, and you get to be an active part in the direction that this country goes. So yes, exercise your right to vote, and go and thank the people that spend their lives making sure
protecting
you have
that right. Yep.
That's right.
Thank you for that. That was a perfect way to end the show. So thank you, as always, everybody, for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. Next week, I will have one of my business associates, Jennifer Marcinkowski, who's been a recruiter for going on 15 to 20 years. And I specifically got an email request a couple months ago from somebody who listens to the show and said, Jen, I love the show, and I need to know, how do I work with recruiters? What are recruiters good for? When should I use a recruiter, and when shouldn't I use a recruiter? And so I'm looking forward to having Jennifer Marcinkowski on the show next Monday to enlighten us on some of those questions of how to effectively work with recruiters. As a reminder, I will be traveling at the end of this month. I highly encourage you to still tune in and listen to our guest host, Allison Garrido, who will be hosting the show on November 21st and the 28th for me in my absence. And if you miss any of our shows, you can always find them on iTunes at Get Yourself the Job on iTunes, or of course on the archive of LA Talk Radio. Thank you so much for tuning in from wherever you are. And if you're an American citizen, get out there and vote. And thank you for tuning in.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.